Hi, and welcome to the Crime Pod. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Sam.
So this week we are going back to the early 2000s and we're going to Manchester as I tell you the bizarre case of Mark and John. Samantha, I know this is two very generic British male names, but are you aware of this case at all?
I was just about to say, Caitlin, you've given me nothing to work with. So, of course, I've never heard of this one.
It's genuinely, though, that is what the case is called. Like, that is
well, so is my next door neighbours, practically. Like, I mean,
it's about them.
Yeah.
No, it's a very bizarre case, but you'll find out why. So Mark and John are not the people's real names. They were names that were given to the press because their names were hidden, because they are children. But Mark and John is what the name is. So obviously they've not gave them surnames or whatever, but so that is it. It's literally the case of Mark and John. When I stumbled across it as well, I was very confused. So I'm going to explain how we've got there first, is because I was watching some rubbish TV, like I like to do, and Catfish, the TV show, came on. I don't know if anyone...
Oh, I mean, love Catfish.
Yeah, I'm talking old school, like, no offence now, but, like, even Max, Catfish, like, that, me, my mum, and my sister were obsessed with that show, like, obsessed, and that is, like, a feel-good TV show. And it got me...
Not for the person getting catfish.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Really tragic for them, but for me...
It's brilliant.
Loving it. And I think especially because nowadays you're so like, how are people falling for this? Like the one where the guy thinks that he's phoning, like he's meeting Katy Perry and stuff. You're just like,
I was just about, I thought about the Katy Perry one as soon as you said that.
Yeah. I'm just like, nah. So if you've not watched it, go give the TV show a watch. The film that the guy done as well years ago that kind of sprung the show, that is also worth a watch. But it got me thinking about like catfishing. I was like, that'd be really good to do like an episode. I wonder if there'd been something that catfishing goes wrong or something. So that is kind of what we are going to do today. So for those that aren't aware, catfishing, the definition is, refers to the creation of a fictitious online persona or fake identity with the intent of deception, usually to mislead a victim into an online romantic relationship or to commit financial fraud. So it doesn't just have to be those two. They can do it for any reason, but it is basically creating somebody online and pretending you are them and it's not. So that is the kind of main definition. So it's not a spoiler, because if I get through this story and you guys are still thinking all the people I'm talking about are real, then that is a you problem. Because
meow.
Because honestly, it's not believable. So for the first time in a while, I'm going to start our case at the end. I actually don't know if I've ever done this, but we're starting at the very end. So we're going to go to June 29th, 2003. I think at the start, I did say the 2000s. I actually thought I'd said 2002 earlier, but I didn't. Alas. Now, we are going to, it's called Antringham, which is a market town in Trafford, Greater Manchester. I have probably said that wrong, and that is okay. So it's like south of the River Mersey, about 8 miles of Manchester, like that kind of thing. It had a population of about 50,000 in 2011. So we're going 7 years earlier. It's probably a little bit less than that. Now, this summer was very, very hot, even for like England summer standards. It was very hot. So we're going to go to a place called Goose Green, which is quite a nice part of Altrincham. And we're going to like an alleyway near the Fishbowl pub. Now, I don't know if, I think the pub's real name was the Fishbowl, but they kind of, it was called that because it was just like round with windows. Now, the pub was heaving, obviously, because the sun's out. And then all of a sudden, police and ambulances come rushing into the alleyway alongside it. So customers go outside for a nose and they hear about a stabbing. Now, towards the end of this alley, there's a teenage boy lying in a pool of blood who is fighting for his life. Now, this boy is John. He was kept alive but had two stab wounds, one in his chest and one in his abdomen. The kitchen knife that was used to stab him was lying next to him. He was rushed to the hospital where he went for emergency surgery, and his heart actually stopped twice on the table, but he survived and was in critical condition in intensive care on a respirator. The witness was his friend, Mark, and he said that they'd basically walked through Goose Green. They were just out and about, and this man, who was about 20 years old, black hoodie and jeans and a white baseball cap, had tried to grab them. This ended up in a bit of a scuffle, and this ended up with John being stabbed twice. Now, of course, a public appeal goes out into Manchester. Everyone's looking at him like there is just a man that stabbed a child for no reason. So, of course, like, he could strike again. There's fear in the community. This doesn't just happen. So the police are putting a lot of work and effort into trying to locate him. However, a main lead for the CCTV, for the police, is the CCTV. And they get CCTV of the surrounding areas to try and track this guy. But they actually get CCTV off the entrance to the alleyway. Now, they see Mark and John go in, but nobody else. And then they just see Mark coming out looking for help. So Mark's placed under arrest and charged with attempted murder. Now, he denies all the allegation and is placed in a young offenders institution. John is transported now to a children's hospital to continue his treatment. But when he was well enough to be interviewed, John denied it was Mark that stabbed him and said he didn't know who he was. He can't even remember, kind of thing. When he was told about the CCTV footage, he actually broke down and confessed it was Mark, his best friend, that stabbed him. So Mark was interviewed again and confessed, saying voices told him to do it. He spent a month in the young offenders. However, he eventually breaks down and tells the officers the truth of why he stabbed John. Now, the officers think his story is a prank by other colleagues, as this story could honestly not be true. Like they said as police, they've heard a lot of wild things, but this completely tops it. So in order for me to tell you this story, we're going to have to go back. So let's go back to the beginning. Mark was from Stockport, which is a nice well-to-do area in Manchester. He was tall, blonde hair, and was an only child, well-to-do parents. He did okay at school. He was very sociable, liked by teachers and friends, and played football. In 2002, 16-year-old Mark got a computer from his parents to do schoolwork, and in the early 2000s, online chat rooms were becoming more of a thing due to more people getting computers in their home. The main thing used for communication amongst teenagers was MSN, which, Sam, that was like a throwback.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. So I obviously had MSN, Sam had MSN, but it's basically, for those that don't know, it's like a messenger service, like online, basically. It's like almost like texting from your computer nowadays. But obviously this is early 2000s. It's still very new and it's in its infancy. Now, this was, as I said, a messenger service, but people could use their own names or nicknames. There was loads of chat rooms as well at this time. So you'd have like, there'd be like Edinburgh Teenagers Forum or True Crime Fans Forum or whatever, that people could then go and join. People could log in under any name and you didn't need ID to set up an MSN account. So you could be whoever you wanted to be. Now, looking at it as an adult in 2024, it's a huge safety breach because people like wouldn't obviously say who they were. This was huge for like paedophiles and everything like that, because they could just go on and be like, oh, I'm 14 and from here. And you'd be like, oh, okay, just use a fake picture of somebody online. So
well,
Mark,
you think about it, we should never have had it. Like, if you, as an adult looking back, our parents should never have let us have it. But then again, they didn't know. So
no,
it was all and new.
And you did just like a lot of the time. Like I was just speaking to like friends from school.
Yeah, but then again as well, you then look at to the fact of, you know, if you were with a group of your pals and you'd go on like Omegle and stuff. The internet was wild back then.
Stop it.
You could literally do anything. It was crazy.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Sorry, I digress.
No, it's fine, but it's a really good point to make, because it was so in its infancy then that people didn't like catfishing. Now, as we said, if you met somebody online and you were like, oh, let's meet up, and they're like, oh no, and you're like, oh, can I see a picture, and like, no, you'd be like, okay, you know who you say you are, bye. But back then it wasn't a thing, so why would you believe somebody was lying? So back to the story. Mark finds himself more confident on MSN and he's able to chat to girls, etc., because I think he was a bit of a shy guy in real life. In the February of 2003, Mark was in a chat room for Manchester teenagers, and he was mainly looking to meet girls, to be honest. Like, he was kind of just hoping he could chat to somebody. And a girl, Rachel West, signs on. So she introduced herself in the room and he private messages her. She's 16, same age as him, long blonde hair in her pictures. Now, they got talking, so they started, like, chatting in private messengers. This ends up getting a bit flirty, sending, like, riskier messages. Mark put his webcam on, but Rachel didn't want to put her camera on due to a bad experience in the past. So this is Caitlin Catfish flag one. A few days later, another guy, John, enters the chat room. He's 14 years old and is introduced to Mark as Rachel's stepbrother. As I said, he was younger than Mark and they were very different. Like, John was bullied at school. He was short with dark hair. People called him gay as he mainly had female friends. So his experience at school and life was very different in comparison to Mark's. Now, they obviously both lived in Manchester and they had a middle class upbringing as well. They both went to private school, Rachel and John's childhood was described as quite tricky. Like, he'd said to Mark that his parents had split at seven, and he found out that his dad was actually not his dad. He'd found his birth certificate and found that his dad was not who he said he was. His biological dad was estranged from him due to violent behaviour. So John, same as Mark, got a laptop for schoolwork, and Rachel added John to a chat with her and Mark. The three of them got speaking and then Rachel left. So Mark was a bit annoyed at this, but actually him and John created a kind of friendship. They realised they had a lot of things in common, like gaming, films, movies. Although there was a 2-year age gap, they actually did get on pretty well, like, besides from this. They had their webcams on with each other and done gaming, watched stuff like movies at the same time. Do you know, like, we had TV on, we're watching a TV programme and your mate's on your webcam kind of thing. This is Caitlin's catfish flag two, because if you're Rachel's brother, go and get her. Do you know what I mean? If your sister's not wanting to go on the camera, just go get her. But she obviously still didn't want to go on the camera, so we move. Although Mark and John were creating a good friendship, whenever Mark was online, it was Rachel that he wanted to speak to. It wasn't really John. He was known to be somebody that kind of fell easy for girls, bless him. And they spoke most nights, up all night sometimes. As this progressed, sometimes Mark would strip off naked on camera and Rachel would watch, but she still wouldn't put her camera on. One night, Mark told Rachel how he really felt. He said, "Look, I love you, like, I'm in love with you." And she said she felt the same way and they became a couple. Like, this, bear in mind, he has still never physically seen her on webcam and they have never met. The three became a tight group, to be fair. Like, Mark and Rachel and John, sorry, even though it was a sibling, even though they were a relationship, they all had their own relationships with each other. So it was quite nice to kind of create this trio. They hadn't met yet, like Mark and Rachel, because Rachel was so busy with school. She was so busy. She also had a part-time job. So it was really difficult to get a hold of her. Mark and John had met in person and actually it worked. They got on really well, even though they were so different, they created this friendship, which was really nice. In the April, a Kevin McGregor joined the Manchester Teens chat. He wrote in pink font, which stood out, but he told everyone it's because he was openly gay. He boasted about having a foot fetish and said that he was a stalker, quote, a real proper stalker. I don't know what that is in comparison to, obviously not a fake stalker. John and Rachel had told Mark that Kevin had been threatening them and following them home from school. Kevin then targeted Mark and told them info that only he, Rachel and John would know. So he's beginning to target Mark and he's saying these things. So Mark's like, oh shit, he actually is a real stalker because he's knowing this information about Rachel and John. So this guy must be legit. Mark was worried he was a threat. So Kevin ordered Mark to go on webcam, show him his feet and masturbate. And if he didn't, he'd kidnap Rachel. Mark was obviously so worried about Rachel being kidnapped that he did this in a private chat with Kevin. So he went on webcam, showed him his feet and masturbated. Rachel was so touched by this act of kindness from Mark. So she suggests that they then do meet in real life. So they set up a date in Altrincham. Mark travelled 40 minutes there and waited 4 hours, but Rachel never showed up at their arranged meeting point. Now, of course, he was absolutely gutted. He's obviously angry and upset as well. So he travels home, gets on MSN, and she wasn't online. And he was hoping that she would be online so she could explain, like, where she was and why she didn't meet when they were supposed to. However, when he got home, he had a message from Kevin. So Kevin had told Mark that he had kidnapped Rachel and told Mark that she was gang raped and killed. He said that he drowned her in freezing cold water and said that Mark wasn't there to help her. So Rachel has been killed by Kevin. Mark was absolutely heartbroken. Like, he obviously can't tell the police. He can't tell his parents. So he's kind of silently grieving. He becomes depressed. His grades are falling. And he's really, really struggling. But John is also struggling with this too. It's his sister that's just been killed. So they support each other. But they're both becoming a bit withdrawn. Do you know what I mean? Mark wasn't online for a while. And Rachel, like, you know, obviously she's been killed. So he's kind of lost that want for MSN. However, he swings back, goes back online looking for girls again. We're over it. This time he met an older girl called Lindsay East. Now, she was new to the chat and he confided in her about Rachel and they became friends. This then developed into some flirting again. Now, he began falling for Lindsay, who also told him she was falling in love with him as well. So we're kind of here again with Mark. Again, Mark put on his camera, but Lindsay didn't. He begins masturbating on the camera again for Lindsay, doing these sex acts when she's asking to via camera. So we're kind of there again. However, Lindsay tells Mark that she really trusts him and that she has something she needs to tell him. Would you like to guess what this is, Sam? Is there any guess of what she might want to tell him?
That she's actually John and it's been John this whole time?
No.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Lindsay is a junior secret service agent for MI6, the secret intelligence service in the UK.
And that was going to be my second guess. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Should have said that first.
And the reason she's joined the chat is because best friend John is under government protection.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So John was being targeted by Kevin and Lindsay was hoping Mark would help find Kevin. She also said he couldn't tell John as it was so confidential. But they're like, okay, so let's get working on this. Talk for a couple of days. Days later, Mark gets an email from Lindsay. The email reveals she has been killed in a secret mission and he has to go on alone to protect John.
Okay.
In the end of April 2003, Mark is online doing his secret missions, yada yada, and Rachel West appears online, dead Rachel. She messages Mark and says she is alive, but she was kidnapped and kept hostage by Kevin. She has also given birth to Mark's child.
Okay.
She's been missing a few weeks. Mark and Rachel have never met. So not to do all the science thing, but even Mark is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, we haven't met. What is going on? Like, what has happened here? She then disappears again. So on we go. So things go back to normal for a little while. And then a woman called Janet Dobinson joins the Manchester Teens chat in early May. She messages Mark saying she's also undercover from MI6, but she was in her 40s. And pretended to work in real estate, but she's actually an undercover MI6 agent. She told Mark she was old, but still, quote, really sexy. Janet confided in Mark that he was being tested by the Secret Service and they wanted to recruit him. He would be paid millions. He could meet the Prime Minister, who in 2003 was Samantha.
Was it Tony Blair?
Correct.
Oh my God, look at me go.
Mark believed this and he accepts his potential offer to become an agent for MI6. Now, before he's taken to London for his training, he has to start proving his worth to become an agent. Now, he has to act as a bodyguard for another Manchester teen and MI6 agent, James Bell. Nobody could know about this mission, including James. So Mark was up for the job, but asked why. Why this James Bell? And they said, well, the Prime Minister gave authority for Janet to tell Mark that there's a huge safe containing jewels worth $568 billion lay at the bottom of the ocean. Some countries know about it, but only the Queen Liz, RIP, knew the combination. Liz had told the code sorry, disrespectful, Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth, told the code to one other person, this James Bell. James Bell, who's he, you're asking? James Bell is John. So John has been this undercover MI6 agent this whole time using a fake name because he is really James Bell. So Mark says, easy, fine, start my mission. Now, he thinks this mission's going to be easy, Mark. He's like, it's no problem, I hang out with John. So we just started hanging out more often. They spent more time together. They met after school. They basically ended up spending all of their time together. So much time that their parents actually insist on meeting each other to make sure this is safe and acceptable, which they did. The parents were happy, so the friendship continued, and they hoped that actually this is maybe a good thing. If they're hanging out in public, maybe this means they're going to stop spending time in their rooms or their computers. So Mark reported back to Janet, who approved of his progress, and said, like, spies are also watching John to make sure that watching Mark to make sure that he's doing the mission correctly with John. Janet started telling Mark locations they'd been spotted, which is true. So he knew he was under surveillance. Like, she would say to him, like, oh, we saw Mark, like, you and John here. And he'd be like, oh, shit, we were there. So he knew that there was other spies in the community spying on him as well. Now, the next initiation was to get his target out of school. So Mark goes to John's school and tells reception he'd been sent to take John to a dentist appointment. The school let him go. Which... I was stunned at. So you're like, oh, okay, no worries. Like, what?
I guess back then, though, it was probably like, oh, yeah, it's so-and-so's, your dad's pal's coming to take you to the dentist.
It's, you know, so what I mean? Bizarre, though, thinking about it now, with, like, what we know. And you're just like, what do you mean? What do you mean this random man's just like, yeah, sure, like, I'm coming in and collecting him for a dentist appointment. And it's like, oh, yeah, no worries. So bizarre. Gets him out of school. We skipped school, went shopping and hung out. John's mum was told he'd left early and found out that he was with Mark. So she had actually gone on to check his computer to find out where he was. Because obviously she's panicking as well, being like, he's left school, I don't know where he is. It's not like he's got a mobile phone or anything. She checks his computer and she sees the messages, finds out they're together, but she also sees messages from Janet. Because Janet had also been contacting John, obviously. They all work for MI6. So she wanted to go to Stockport, because that's where, obviously, Mark is. So she goes to Stockport and finds John at Mark's house and tells Mark's mum about the messages as well. Now, they were warned not to do that again, and their online time was restricted. They're saying, like, you don't know who you're speaking to, like, this woman might not be telling the truth, but the boys are obviously like, shut up, we work for MI6. So they find a way to get online and go back to secretly message each other and Janet. Mark knew his assignment was a matter of, quote, national security. So he knows he has to do it, because if not, Janet could lose her job and potentially her life. So he's like, okay, I need to do this. So he gets another mission. And this mission is to make John look gay. And he has to perform a sex act on John to make this look legit. So Mark goes and sleeps over at John's house and performs a sex act on him that weekend. Janet was pleased to know this had happened and was glad that Mark had passed his initiation. He was going to be given a gun, £500,000, and a license to kill. So Janet had asked Mark if he was capable of killing somebody close to him, and he replied, yes, I could. There's my answer. So Janet, gave him his first assassination mission, to assassinate James Bell, aka John. So he's so confused. Like, he's done his weapons training. Like, he hasn't done his weapons training. Sorry, opposite. He hasn't done his weapons training. Like, he hasn't been paid. Like, he's not been paid yet. He's not gone to London. Like, what's going on? But she was serious. She's like, listen, the country depends on this. Once you do it, you'll get 80 million, your official MI6 badge, and some sexual favours. Which I'm like, oh, right. So she says to him, basically,
why does MI6 throw in some sexual favors? James Bond, I know there was always like a Bond girl, but like, come on,
honestly, yeah, some sexual favors are chucked in there. So she says, listen, it's actually a favor you killing John, because he's not well, he has an inoperable brain tumor, and actually, it's technically a favor to him. So Mark didn't believe this, however. A few days later, Dawn tells Mark about the tumour. Says, quote, I got a brain thingy tumour. It's big. So Mark knew Janet telling the truth. So he's like, actually, killing John's now not that bad. It's kind of a favour to him. So Janet gave him the plot. She said, look, stabbing is the best way to do it because you're not allowed your gun yet. And you need to say the words, trust me, as he dies. So on June the 28th, 2003, MI6 officially welcomed 16-year-old Mark from Manchester into their Secret Service agency and gave him his agent number, 47695. In preparation to carrying out his assassination, he made plans to go and meet John the next day. He was nervous but proud of his new job. Like, he's got a job for MI6 at 16. Brilliant. He spoke to Janet all day before. Janet advised him to buy a large knife and a pair of gloves to hide the fingerprints on the knife. She told him to take Mark somewhere secluded and quiet and to tell John, she told Mark, sorry, to take him somewhere secluded and quiet and to tell John that he loved him before he died. Mark said, I love him, but this has to be done. He was told not to call 999 and stay put as Janet would arrive as a pretend undercover detective and superintendent and take him away so he wouldn't face any criminal charges. If he heard or saw the code 6969, he had to abort the mission as it was most likely that something had changed. This was most likely going to be shouted, but it could be written or whatnot. So the plan is in motion. Mark goes to meet John the next day on Sunday the 29th of June. So we're back to the start. They met in the Trafford Centre and Mark actually took John shopping with him for a knife. Now, when we were 14 and 16, if we had hung out and you were like, can you chum me for a knife? I'd be like, what the fuck?
Also, we weren't allowed to. You'd always get ID'd. You'd get ID'd for scissors.
I know. Well, not back here.
Maybe not back then, actually.
No. So John picks out a 6-inch chef's knife and Mark pays for it. They wander around town, but Mark keeps looking for the code 6969, but he doesn't see it or hear it. So he's staring everyone out, thinking, you know, everyone here could be undercover looking for me to do this. I don't have a choice. So John asks Mark why he's acting strange, and Mark kind of shrugs it off, just kind of says, like, okay, that's what it is. So they walk along together and he sees the alleyway. So Mark walks John up the alleyway and Mark pulls out the knife and told John basically what he had to do. So John says nothing, he's just staring at Mark like, what the fuck? And Mark says, I love you, bro, and stabs him in the chest. John crumpled to the floor and cried out, basically. And Mark whispered, shh, or people will hear. Mark hugged him as John cried, you've killed me. Mark hugged him more and realised he wasn't dying quick enough. So he stood John back up, whispered, trust me, and stabbed him again in the stomach, piercing his kidney and liver. Mark waited for Janet to arrive, but nobody did. So he was ordered not to call an ambulance, but he was getting a bit stressed out. So Mark cracked and he called 999 and waited for her to arrive as a DSI. He walked to the end of the alleyway and stood out in the main street and looked at all the police, but he couldn't find anyone that matched Janet or was how Janet said she'd look. When he was interviewed, as I mentioned at the start, the reason that Mark didn't mention MI6 is because he believed that if he did, he would get in trouble, like from an MI6 point of view, not from the police. He is still adamant during his interviews that Janet's going to come and get him, and he truly believes he is an MI6 agent with a license to kill. Once they've told the police all this, they're like, what the fuck? So Mark's computer is seized. And because obviously the police are hearing about this naked webcam videos and they're worried that he's actually been involved with a paedophile ring, but that is ruled out quite quick. He tries to find Janet's identity, but he's going through all 133 members of this Manchester teens chat room, but there's nothing that kind of straight up says who she is. There were 6 chat room users at the heart of this story. Mark, John, Rachel, Kevin, Lindsay and Janet. They all spoke to Mark, but in different ways, about different things. However, 5 of these 6 people had misspelt the word maybe. They had spelt it M-Y-B-Y-E. So how could 5 people make the same mistake, but they're not speaking the same? Like, the language that Rachel used was different to the language Kevin used, etc. So it came out that all these characters, Rachel, Kevin, Lindsay and Janet, were being run by one person. John's mum gave over his laptop and looked, and that's when they got a shock because Janet's account was logged in on John's computer, meaning John was Janet, meaning John was Janet, Kevin, Lindsay and Rachel. So when John was confronted, he admitted everything. So he had said that he bullied his, like, he'd been bullied all his life, so he became anyone but himself in these chat rooms. He spent all time playing these different parts, spent his life in his room on MSN, basically. So John had first entered the chat as Rachel West, became friends, flirted with Mark. He got a sense that he could be himself with Mark, so created his own account, pretending to be Rachel's brother, and obviously that goes well. John realises he's fallen in love with Mark, but Mark's in love with Rachel, so he creates Kevin to kill off Rachel, because this friendship became John's world and he knew he needed to get rid of Rachel to keep the friendship going. Once Rachel died, Mark was so sad that he realised that it wasn't going to be the same, so he created the other alliances. He created Janet, he created Lindsay, he made more and more, and some only even spoke to like Mark for a day or so. There was other accounts that I've not even mentioned. John was terrified Mark was going to find out the truth, which, I mean, no wonder. And he became so depressed and suicidal, so that's why he created Janet and planned his own suicide. He came up with the wording, the weapon, and basically created this plan for his best friend to kill him. So it was a suicide plan, basically. He wanted to die knowing that Mark loved him, and hearing that was all he wanted. So 3 months after the stabbing, John was arrested and was the first ever person in the UK charged with incitement to murder himself. Mark was still in the Young Offenders when he found out the truth that everyone was John. And as you can imagine, he was absolutely stunned, but probably as well thinking to himself, like, how the fuck have I managed to like be fooled for this long? The court began in May 2004 on the 28th. Mark arrived looking quite a lot fitter and bulkier from custody, as he'd been doing a lot of time working out the Young Offenders. John cried the whole way through the court, basically, and they didn't speak to each other. Justice David Madison both boys pleaded guilty, and Justice David Madison presided over it. That's what I tried to say. Mark's was attempted murder, and the judge said, quote, skilled writers of fiction would struggle to conjure up the plot that arises here. John was getting support from psychologists now and was doing well, and due to the nature of the case, neither actually got prison time. They both got non-custodial sentences. John was determined to kill himself and basically dragged Mark into it. So John got a 3-year supervision order and was banned from using online chat rooms. Mark got a 2-year supervision order and was also banned from using chat rooms online. Don't think he would want to anymore, to be fair. They were also banned from contacting each other. As I said at the start, Mark and John are not the real names. They had an indefinite order for anyone involved in the case to have their names hidden, because they were so young, and especially for like Mark, he's probably wanting to get on and have some sort of normal life. The story's gone on to be loads of things. There was a play made of it called I Love You Bro. There was an opera called Two Boys, and there was a film in 2004 called You Want Me to Kill Him, which is all one word in like tech speak. Where are they now? Well, it's quite difficult because obviously their identity is hidden. Apparently John's doing well, living with a boyfriend and has a dog, and Mark's future is completely unknown, which is good. But that is the story of Mark and John. Samantha, is that what you expected?
Not at all. No. That was wild. I would never, like, you know me, I can make up stories. I've got a great imagination. But like what the judge said, not that I'm saying I'm an author. I'm not an author. But I mean,
I was like, wow.
I couldn't have even thought up that plan.
No, it's crazy.
As well, though, it's sad. There was... obviously John got bullied and he created all of that, and that's one thing, like, oh
yeah, absolutely,
bullies, I just hate them all. But also Mark was a victim, so he kind of it was awful, but
they're
so
both victims in a bizarre way.
Yeah, but then if you were in that situation and it was the early thousands, like, to be honest, you might have believed it. I know we're looking at hindsight. That was mental.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Looking on from like a future point of view, that's why there is a kind of couple of bits that we've laughed at or been like, oh my god, this is no way real. But back then, you wouldn't believe that someone wasn't who they said they were. Why would you?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a lot. Wow. It's a big case. But it is nice to know that both of them have kind of gone on and got on with their lives, which is actually a positive ending in comparison to a lot of our cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Maybe even if you were one of them who could be like, mind that time I thought I was working for MI6. Might not be like that. But I mean, you
might not, Samantha. He's probably got trauma.
Yeah, don't we all? But I mean, anyway, it's a good ending to the fact of they both survived. Probably a lot of stuff was learnt as well by the police. You probably wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, wow.